Welcome, everybody, to the Epic Levels Mad Dungeon Podcast. We are podcasting live from GaryCon in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, 2024. I am the Dragon Warrior.
And I am Andrew, the Tiger Wizard. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Exalted Funeral, for sponsoring the show. Go check out ExaltedFuneral.com. We've got a very special guest joining us here today, all the way from, where do you come from? New York?
Seattle, Washington.
Okay. Stefan, welcome to the show.
Hello. I'm the Dwarvenot originally from New York City, but I've now moved with the wonderful Ann Carlton to Seattle, Washington, pre-pandemic. And we've been there now for about 5 or 6 or 7 years. I'm very, very shaky on the exact time frame, but
time definitely stopped for pandemic years.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
Could you just, for all of our listeners, give us a brief introduction to who you are and
what is Dwarven
and
Forge?
What is a forge
and
of dwarves?
What are you up to these days?
Who am I? This is like deep stuff we're getting into.
This is what we're going to do today. We're going to figure this stuff out.
Well, yes. Stefan Pokorny. I am the adopted son of Italian and Czech immigrants. I was born in Korea, and I was then, after a year, I was put into an orphanage by my mother. No, my father left after a year. And the second year, I was given to the orphanage by my mother, who was Korean. My father was American. He came back to America, supposedly. He was a Korean, American soldier in Korea. They had this Korean War over there.
You know? Yeah, I heard about that.
And I guess he was still there. And so then I was in the orphanage and then adopted by these two Europeans who were too old to have children. My mother and father were like 40 and 50 years old when they adopted me. And so I came over from Korea, was adopted to New York City. And so we're all immigrants, you know? It's like one of those fairy tale stories, you know? Like one from Italy, one from Czechoslovakia, fleeing the Nazis, because that was like back in World War II, you know? My father fled. He was 23 years old. My mother came to New York when she was 40. So they really are, you know, Europeans. And I did a lot of traveling. So I guess I'm making a way longer story.
I'll tell you this, though, Stefan. So every character, whether imagined on paper or in real life, deserves a fully fleshed out backstory, which is what we just got here.
I gave the whole backstory there.
This because today we're here. People could go look up what you've done and all of your rad terrain for playing Dungeons & Dragons, playing games with you, all of these things. But the question that we're here for today at GaryCon, at the 50-year anniversary of Dungeons & Dragons, is the question, what has 50 years of Dungeons & Dragons meant to you?
My God, what has it meant to me? Well, I started playing from, you know, New York City, right? Where we're like, oh, you know, there's a million things to do in New York, right? But there's this little store called The Complete Strategist. And that was like one of the few stores where you could geek out on this kind of stuff. I went to summer camp when I was like 9 or 10 years old, and we had an archery counselor there named Doug. That's all
Doug.
I know about this guy. I've never contacted him. I don't know what he's doing in life or if he kept playing or what, but he was the archery counselor. He introduced us kids to D&D, and we were completely taken by it at the tender age of 9 or 10.
I like that it's an archery guy. It might as well have been a swordsman who taught you.
He was part of the Judges Guild, apparently.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, the Judges Guild. He used to walk around with a staff. He looked like a D&D character. I mean, he was fully into it, you know?
Doug, if you're out there listening right now, please.
Hit us up.
Yeah, please keep stringing
Where
up those
are you,
bows.
Doug?
Yeah,
look what you're
arrows.
Responsible for,
so
Doug.
This was the 70s, right?
This was the 70s, late 70s.
So we do have 50 years of Dungeons & Dragons. We could even go decades. So what was the 70s like for you for Dungeons & Dragons?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I was just starting out, so I guess probably when the Player's Handbook came out, And then the Dungeon Master's Guide, that's when I started the world building. You know, I was completely absorbed. Gary Gygax said, you must make your own world, and I completely embraced that. I'm a pretty creative guy, so I like the creative part of the whole thing. I spent hours and hours just creating my world of Mithras, you know, and Theater of the Mind. You know, a lot of people don't realize that even though I'm the founder of Dwarven Forge, three-dimensional dungeons, I started Theater of the Mind like everyone else, you know, and played that way for, well, throughout the 70s, the 80s. So 2 decades of Theater of the Mind before I ever painted or sculpted a piece, you know.
When did that happen for you, when you did start playing with minifigs and terrain and things?
I think it was the late 80s, early 90s.
Still playing second edition?
First edition. We did dabble in second edition a little bit during that time. And I had answered an ad in the Complete Strategist on the billboard, as gamers are wont to do, searching for players. And I contacted this guy called James Kelleher, said, I would like to join your campaign. And he's like, okay, we're going to interview you, you know, come by, meet us at such and such house. Blah,
oh,
blah,
you
blah.
Had to interview to join the game?
Yes.
They wanted interview. To filter out any, yes,
any
jerks,
weirdos.
Jerkwads, yeah.
I see, I got through anyway. they were impressed by my maps. And then I started playing with James Kelleher, and he liked to paint the miniatures. So I got into the miniatures, and so James Kelleher was my first dungeon master, and what he went on to become the dude that created stat trackers.
Oh.
No stat trackers?
That had the hit points in the base?
Yeah, they put it on the screen, and there's the stat trackers. Yeah. So he's the CEO of stat trackers. He was my dungeon master. And he has a booth at conventions and stuff, just like I have a booth at conventions. And every once in a while, we play D&D together.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he was in Manhattan at that time. Then he moved to Long Island. And I used to take the train out to Long Island to play D&D with him. And I was playing D&D with him when I created the first tiles in 1996.
Ah.
And we tested it out with him and his guys over there, the prototypes and stuff. And yeah, so we that's how it all started. I went to Gen Con the first time ever in 1996 and got a 10-foot booth. And I brought like 300 boxes or something. Maybe it was 300 or 600, I don't recall. But we sold out in 4 hours. And then we were like scrambling. Oh, my God, what do we do now?
Yeah, what do we do with the booth for the rest of the time?
Just set up a table.
The display.
Yeah, just set up a table and play.
We kept the display, and we took people's emails, which is a novel thing back then.
Oh, yeah.
We had people fill out forms and emails, and then we mailed stuff to them, snail mail.
Oh, wow.
You know, little brochures when we came out with new stuff. And, yeah.
Yeah, so when did Dwarven Forge end up taking off for you? Like, we get into the 2000s at this point?
It kind of was...
That sounds like a great start. Like,
almost a hobby for me in the beginning, you know? I was a painter and sculptor, and I was selling paintings. And I was doing commissions, portraits, paintings, still lifes. And on the side, to make money, I was like, I'm going to sell these dungeons. And so at first it was like, you know, very slow. And I wasn't fully committed to it. I would just sculpt like one set a year, like 10 or 12 pieces a year while I did my painting. And it just, I would sell 30,000 a year, maybe 50,000 a year, and be like, oh my God, I'm starting to sell more of this than I am selling paintings. And then I was able to eventually make enough money to hire a person. And it was at a Gen Con when my booth was swamped. I forget which set had come out. Maybe it was the Cavern set that had come out. And the booth was swamped. I was like, oh my God, this is more than I can handle myself at a booth all by myself. And these friendly guys, these gamers, were like, you know, do you need help? We work in retail. We could help you. I'm like, sure, jump over. Yeah.
Get and on this side of the
you're
table.
You're hired.
Yeah, yeah, an instant hiring. And one of those guys happened to be Jeff Martin. Now, Jeff Martin, as you may know, is the owner of True Dungeon.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So he was my manager. I hired him first for like a Gen Con, and they're like, hey, this guy, this was great, guys. And they were trustworthy. They handled all kinds of cash. I got all the cash in the end. You know, I was like, why don't you guys, why don't we make this official next year? Why don't you and your friends help me with my booth? And so we did that for a year or two. And then I was like, you know what, Jeff, I actually need a manager. Would you like to be the manager? And so Jeff Martin became my manager. And in Carbondale, Illinois, he was running the business side of Dwarven Forge. So for many years, for maybe another decade, it was me and Jeff Martin. And then we had the first Kickstarter. And it was like, I think right after Reaper did their Bones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember.
And
that.
I was like, I couldn't believe how much money they made. And I was like, and I went into immediate panic. I said, oh my God, a new age is upon us. And if I do not jump on this bandwagon, someone else will. Someone else will make some of these kind of plastic dungeons, and I'll be out of business. Because we were a small operation. I was like, oh. So I found out everything I could about this. We immediately enacted our own Kickstarter campaign. I talked to my factories. I said, well, what can we do? We went through some prototype processing, and I came up with the Dwarvenite. The Dwarvenite. It's like a kind of a PVC sort of emulsion of things, you know? And it was nice. We cast it in a solid gray and got them hand-painted, you know? And we launched our Kickstarter. I think it did $2 million, the first one.
It was a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were all not that many pieces. But
when did the documentary come into play?
Then a few years later, we did the documentary. Josh Bishop was, I was hiring Josh Bishop to come over and do a sizzle reel. What I wanted to have was a sizzle reel to do. I thought, you know, we should have a show on TV, you know? Yeah. I look at these people with their shows, and they're selling junk, or they're, you know, these reality shows. I'm like, we should have a reality show because our business is so crazy. I bet people would love it. So we were going to do a sizzle reel, and Josh Bishop came over, and after a week of filming our antics in the office, he took me aside. He said, listen, I don't know what you're doing here, but you don't want to do a TV show. You don't want to scissor with it. This is what you're doing here is way crazier than that. And you're like, you're an insane person. I really want to do. I'm a documentarian, and I want to do a documentary about you. So he kind of talked me into it. So he went from just a little scissor to let's do a film. Let's do this documentary. And what happened? So he ended up spending a year of his life following me around from convention to convention and going to the office. I'd call him and say, Josh, there's some shit going down today. I think bring your camera to the office. You got to film this.
Got some high drama going on here. Get the cameras rolling.
Get your ass over. And so he used to come over and film stuff. And
it's an exciting movie. Like, it is a fun ride to go on with you.
I think a lot of people don't realize it's a documentary. They just think it's a film, you know, because the way he shot it was like kind of made it into not so boring, you know. It became like
it's not boring at all.
It became like this drama of this Kickstarter, you know. And then I was always mic'd up. So he took all the talk that I was talking all the time, and he spliced it up and made me the narrator. Uh-huh. I was kind of shocked when I saw the first cut. I was like, oh, my God, I didn't know I was going to narrate my own story, you know?
Well, it adds a lot to it. It
I
does.
Guess, yeah, know, I don't guess.
You know?
Yeah,
once the cat was out of the hat, he's like, okay, but we need you to say a few other things. Let's get you in the studio. And I did some talk, which is harder than you think. You know,
you make it look easy though. Like it seems very effortless.
I was learning on the job, you know.
So after the documentary, you know, the you had the big Kickstarter, and the documentary came out. Like, what was the next thing?
The next thing was people
so we're in decades. What happened in the 2010s?
Netflix picked it up, you know.
Yeah,
and people started to recognize me, like out in the wild, you know, like in the strangest places. like in Australia and England, and people would come up to me and be like, are you the dwarf or not?
What's your answer to that question?
It's like, why, yes, I am.
Oh, okay.
What are you
confirmed.
Doing? You want to come to dinner with us?
Confirmed. Is, in fact, the dwarf or not.
Yeah, they've met this guy in a beer garden in Australia, and I was so shocked that he knew who I was. I was like, well, we're going out for Chinese food. Why don't you come with us?
And you're like, here we go. It's what'd another you, adventure.
He went on an adventure.
Yeah, what'd you have?
What
did you eat that day?
Yeah, what did you have
to dinner?
How
the heck do I remember that?
Okay, all right.
Jesus, I had Chinese food.
Excellent. All right.
All right, so we
the
did that.
The fact that I remember that is already like a miracle.
So we have lots of stuff going on. The first Kickstarter is great. The documentary hits. And
Chinese yeah. food.
Chinese food. It yeah. was eaten in Australia, which is known for its Chinese cuisine.
Yeah. Is it?
No.
Okay.
But is... So now we've done lots of sets of Dwarven Forge.
What did you think? I was going to eat kangaroo or something?
That would be amazing.
How
do
you,
love
how you know it wasn't?
Could have been.
Oh!
I mean, it could...
Oh, my gosh.
Kangaroo
sweet
everywhere.
And sour, sweet and yeah. sour kangaroo.
Whatever it was,
really
I survived.
Good.
I'm still here.
Yeah, yeah, you made it.
Yeah.
So where are we at in Dwarven Forge now? Where does Dwarven Forge stand today in 2024?
Now, today, I am at GaryCon. Because I have now Nate Taylor, who is there running the show. And he is actually there running a game found thing right now, right this moment. We launched the sci-fi set.
Nice.
Yeah, the future is here.
What are the dates?
Now. Go out and back it now.
Yeah, what are the dates?
Starforged.
Starforged.
Starforged is happening right
game
now.
Game found.
On game found.
What are the dates that it's launched? Say the dates.
There's probably another 12 days left.
Okay.
Oh, this will not be out in that time probably.
Oh.
But maybe. We'll see what we can do.
But you'll still be able to get it when
that's
it's in
the
store
place.
Later.
You,
you know?
Yeah. So let's round it back to the question of what does 50 years of Dungeons & Dragons mean to you? And what we've just gone through is an entire life that wouldn't have happened yeah. without this game.
Oh,
right?
Yes. It really did change my life from being an artist, a fine artist, to being the CEO of this crazy company, which, you know, which is... made me travel all over America, which I probably would not have done if I had just stayed in New York and been an artist. I would have stayed in New York. I wouldn't have had any reason to go anywhere. But because I fly around to all these conventions, you know, 7 or 8 conventions a year, I met people all over this country, and I saw what an incredible country this was. Every state is different. People in different states are different. It's an incredible country. And so... And now even the world, I fly out to Germany, I fly to Italy, I go to other countries to game and to role play for other people. It's done for my life. I met so many people. When I think about it, almost all the friends I have, I've met because of gaming. They're all gamers.
Yeah.
So it's a big community of people. It's and I think what's important about it now even is that as this world becomes more and more addicted to technology and to screens, it's important that people sit around the table and talk to each other face to face and share this time together, which is becoming more and more rare. I think the younger generation, they're a little more shy, and they're not used to going out and making fools of themselves with one another.
Right.
Out in the other. I think they're a little scared of social media and what might be said or how they might do something or say something that'll be forever fixed on the social media, and then they'll get canceled later for something, and it's scary to people. We didn't have that growing up. You know, we would do stupid things, and then no one would ever remember it.
You'd be secret idiots. Just you and your friends.
We were just growing up, playing and out on the street and getting into trouble. And now it's like, wow, your every move is monitored. You know, so maybe that's done something to people.
What I'm hearing is we need to take a break from staring at our screens, sit around a table with a bunch of our friends.
Yes.
Sling some silly back and forth.
Yes.
And most importantly... while you're doing that, you need to have a full set of Dwarven Forge gaming tiles, right?
Yes.
To reenact your fantasy combats.
It would be nice to have it. You know, obviously you don't have to, but from my selfish perspective, yes. Go out and buy as much as you can.
I mean, come on. For your benefit, let's just go ahead and say you have to have it, right?
But the important thing is the gaming, you know, this brotherhood, sisterhood
of gaming. The time spent together.
Go out, any kind of person, any kind of game, 5th edition, 3rd edition, 1st edition, anything. The important thing is to retain your humanity and go out and... That's what gaming is all about. That's all these people here, thousands of people are here embracing. It's such, I go out into the wild here in the corridors and at the bar, and everyone is having such a great time, and everyone is so nice and friendly, and it's just, this is the greatest experience ever. GaryCon.
Hell yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we love it lots. Thank you so much for being on the show, Stefan.
Thank you so
much.
And
we'll have links in the show notes for all of the cool stuff, the movie, Dwarven Forge games, all the stuff that you could go buy. Thank you so much for being on the
show. You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Stefan.
All right, guys.
Hey, here are some announcements. The Mega Dungeon Met EP is out. Check it out on all the listening platforms. We're closing in on the end of the Mystic Punks Kickstarter, so if you haven't kickstarted it yet, you've got one last chance to do so, so go check it out. The Dungeon Cats Backer Kit surveys have been set, so check your emails. You can find some of our merch at the Exalted Funeral, including our poster maps, and join our mailing list at epiclevelsrapgods.com. See you next week. Thanks for listening.